Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, we're going to focus a lot on the resource sector, but then also looking outside of the resource sector to where some of the catalysts are going to come from and some of the main topics that seem to be continuing to dominate the news headlines. Just to start here, look, we are coming out of summer. It was a very slow summer for the resource sector, pretty slow summer for markets broadly, but the resource sector continued to correct as the U.S. markets continued to inch, or let's say just crawl higher and higher. Now the question really is, when traders come back to their desk and when volume does pick up, what are the catalysts going to be that you're watching when it comes to drivers for the resource and especially precious metals markets?
Oh, one of them is going to be financial market interest rate expectations, not necessarily interest rates themselves, but just the market's expectations of where they're going. And I think that, you know, that's going to be one of the key factors that's going to be going on. You know, in the United States, we are now in an expansion phase of the economy. You know, we've gotten out of the recovery. GDP is higher, was higher in the second quarter than it had been in the fourth quarter of 2019. We're moving forward. We have a lot of fiscal stimulus that's supposed to be coming into the economy over the next few quarters, we'll be watching to see if it actually comes in. So I think that we're looking at a stronger economy, which should be reflected in higher stock prices, somewhat flat interest rates. And I think that, you know, some of what we saw in what you called the quiet summer will probably continue for the resource sector. So, you know, we had a spurt of bullishness in gold and silver January into April, and then that kind of dissipated. And, you know, May through August, we saw investors saying, hey, maybe gold, these things aren't as strong as we had hoped. Then you saw, after April, you saw a spurt of interest in the platinum market, which took the price out of that $800 to $1,000 range up to $1,200. And now that's sort of dissipating. So we're looking at the last 4 months of the year, and we're saying, okay, from a precious metals perspective and from a copper perspective to some extent, you know, we think that the gold and silver markets will move modestly higher, but they're going to be restrained by people's concerns that the gold and silver markets get oversold to investors, and then the investors get disenchanted and they pull back. And we've had we've seen that over the last 4 or 5 months, and I think that that's going to be a little bit of a headwind for gold and silver. On the PGMs, especially platinum, we do think that the price probably moves higher, but you know, it's a combination of factors. Platinum prices moved higher partly because the auto industry was using more platinum. They were coming out of the economic lockdown, and they were shifting away from as much palladium intensity as they had in catalysts to more platinum intensity in catalysts. So there was a fundamental fabrication demand push in the gold platinum price higher. But then you saw investors seeing that, and you also saw investors pivoting away from gold and silver. Okay, gold and silver were disenchanted with. Where do we go next? Hey, look at platinum. And then now what we've seen in August with the platinum market is that investor disenchantment and saying, hey, wait a second, the semiconductor chip problems are restraining auto demand. I'm hearing some people say that maybe we're at peak auto and we just won't be using automobiles as much in the future. So I think that you're going through some introspection in the platinum market. I think it's misplaced, and I do think that the platinum price, you know, moves back above $1,000. It's trading on either side of that today as we're talking. I do think the price of platinum moves back above $1,000 on a firmer basis and continues to move higher in a modest fashion. So that's sort of what we're looking for in the fourth quarter, in the last 4 months of the year.
Well, Jeff, there's a lot of currents that we see out in the marketplace between the supply chain interruptions you were alluding to there. Some people are afraid that the reopening trade may be slowing down, but we at the same time have infrastructure bills being passed for trillions of dollars that should help with some of the raw commodities. And at the same time, we hear certain people concerned that maybe the precious metal bull market is over after the correction since last summer down to where it is in the gold and silver market. At the same time, people are saying historically commodities are undervalued compared to all other assets. So if we zoom out from a bigger picture's perspective, where do you see the gold and silver markets, and where do you see the commodities markets like copper and nickel and zinc?
Well, you know, second part first, you know, I think that the concept that commodity markets are undervalued in a historical context is probably misplaced. If you look at real commodity prices relative to overall economic activity over the last 200 years, real commodity prices basically have fallen, and they'll continue to fall, and they'll fall for a variety of reasons, and they'll be weak relative to the overall economy because, A, the economy moves away from things to services and to the internet. And so you need fewer metals per unit of GDP going forward. And I think that that's a factor. But the other thing is that as the economies develop and technology develops, you find ways to use less metal per thing. And you also find ways to recover more metal from your ore and from your scrap. So I think that you've got, you know, a firmer supply and a less firm demand in commodities in general. So that's why commodities seem to be underperforming the economy. I'm not surprised that they seem to be underperforming the economy. It's what I would expect given technological changes. Now, with gold and silver, you know, there's still a tremendous number of problems around. And I think that those problems probably are being undervalued right now, or underappreciated, if you will, by the financial markets. And so one of the things that we think will occur possibly over the course of the fourth quarter, if not the fourth quarter into 2022, is we think that the financial markets will sort of refocus on the economic, financial, and political issues that the world and the United States are facing. And that will cause investors to say, okay, I don't think that the bull market in gold and silver is over. I think that we're in the foothills of that bull market, and we're taking a breather because we've gotten past 2020.
So, Jeff, what stage of, let's say, the precious metals bull market are we in? We've gotten answers all across the board. Some saying that we're in the middle inning. Some even saying that we're in an inning such as the seventh inning. If you go back to, let's say, 2015 as the start of this bull market, what stage do you think we're in currently?
I think we're in the third inning. You know, I think that we're in the early stages of the bull market. You know, from 2015 to 2019, it was really more a matter of consolidation for gold and silver. Prices started moving up in June, July of 2019. They got to a peak. In the first week of August, they came off. And, you know, scary thing for me on a short-term basis is the last 2 years, 2019, 2020, we've seen precious metals, gold and silver prices peak in the first week of August and then stay weak all the way through December and only start rising in late December or in January, which is atypical seasonality for gold and silver prices. Gold and silver prices usually are stronger historically in the fourth quarter for fabrication and investment demand purposes reasons. So, you know, I think we're in the third inning, and you know, the teams are just warming up right now, and the big bats are yet to come up and swing.
Well, Jeff, what do you think of the disconnect to some degree in the relatively, I still say, solid metals prices for both silver and gold as it relates to the producers, but the pressure we've seen in the mining stocks where they've been a little disconnected? We've covered this with other folks, but it seems like they've been disproportionately weak compared to where the metals prices are. What do you make of that?
I think there are several factors there. I think we have five or six factors that we say these are the things that are restraining mining equity stocks right now. And most of them don't have to do with mining equities. I do think that there's a lot of disenchantment with management on the part of institutional investors. But there's some bigger, broader issues that transcend mining. And that is that institutional investors, A, they control a bigger, ever larger portion of the investment purse or wallet. And they are increasingly focusing on indexed funds and ETFs as opposed to single stock purchases. When you start looking at the mining industry, and especially the gold and silver mining industry, you find that even the largest mining companies are small compared to the assets under management of the largest asset management companies, which control most of the assets under management. So these guys just, you know, the asset managers simply say, these companies are too small for us to pay attention to, and there are these indexed funds that we can invest in that actually outperform the individual stocks. Then you have cost pressures within the buy side of the industry, which is leading the upper management to move away from stock picking by portfolio managers to quantitative indexed investing across the sector, which has frankly outperformed stock picking over the last, say, 5 years or so. You know, you have periods of time when the stock pickers beat the computers, but for most of the time, the computers are beating the stock pickers. So you've got the buy side sort of saying, let's move away from picking individual stocks, especially smaller stocks. And then, you know, if you look at copper, for example, it used to be that we had, you know, a half a dozen companies that you could say that's a copper company. And you have very few companies that you would say are copper companies now. So that when copper got hot earlier this year, asset managers were saying, well, which stocks do we buy? And it's like, well, Rio is diversified, BHP is diversified, Anglo American is diversified. You know, we've got Freeport-McMoRan, they're still primarily copper. You know, and so I think that the market, the mining equity market, in some ways has been marginalized, not by anything that it's done, but by simply the growth and structural changes that have occurred on the institutional investor side. And I think that that's the major reason why you see the stocks underperforming the metals.
Jeff, quick comment before we leave this one topic then. As a summary, you deal with or work with a lot of large mining companies and a lot of large investors, such as funds. Where are you seeing interest in the metals and resource sector right now? Because the argument being no one's cared about the sector, especially over summer.
You know, we're seeing the interest more from smaller specialized fund managers. And we're seeing interest, you know, there is interest in gold and silver, but there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of hesitancy because of the asymmetrical information flows. By which I mean there's a lot of garbage information about gold and silver which turns off institutional investment managers. They say, I can't wade into this muck. There is increased interest in platinum group metals, especially platinum, with the idea that the market share growth of electric vehicles is going to be slower than some people think, and you're going to have an extended period of time where people are still using petrol and diesel for fuel. And, you know, we have a couple charts that we use in our presentations from the International Energy Agency showing that, yeah, 2040, 2050, you're still going to have oil as the major source of energy in the world. Coal will have come down to 2008 levels, but it's still going to be one of the top four. Renewables is growing, but it really doesn't take off for another 20 years in terms of the percentage share of energy mix. And natural gas rises. So there are a lot of investors who are now saying, okay, I'm interested in battery metals and energy metals, but I'm also interested in PGMs because I think that the market has underestimated the durability of petroleum-based fuels in terms of the next 20, 30, 40 years as to how much we're still going to be using oil, you know, despite all the optimistic prognostications you hear. You just look at the reality of the energy market, we're still going to be using oil. And as long as we're using oil, I'm going to need PGMs to scrub the exhaust.
That's fair. Okay, Jeff, switching focus just a little bit here. I feel like we have to talk about the Fed and the statements that came out of Jackson Hole. Also, some of the comments, especially in the minutes that came out the week before Jackson Hole. We were talking about this off mic, and look, the fact of the matter is it looks like the Fed is going to be at least tightening or winding back some of its QE policies and easy money printing. But you think that the markets are misreading what the Fed had to say. Please share your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think the markets have misread what the Fed said. I think the Fed has been pretty clear as what they're saying, which is, hey, first off, we're not going to raise interest rates for the foreseeable future. We're talking about maybe starting to raise them, in late 2023. And that is a long time from now. And even if you look at the dot plots, we're not looking at sharply higher nominal rates. We're looking at 2 to 2.5% nominal rates, which means we're looking at negative real rates still 2 years from now. So we don't see interest rates changing. And Powell has been very clear. He said we may see negative real interest rates for the next decade. Now, a lot of people overreacted to that. You know, it's not that big of a deal because, well, it is a big deal. But if you stop and look at the T-bill rates, they've been negative for most of the last 13 years. So it's not like he's saying, oh, we're going into a period of negative interest rates. He's saying the last 13 years since 2008 have seen a paradigm shift in interest rates. And we've had this extended period of time of low T-bill rates and negative real rates. And that's probably going to last for at least another decade. And I think a lot of people have focused on that. And so they've gotten bullish on inflation, we think inappropriately, and to some extent on gold and silver in the stock market. But I think people are also overlooking the potential impact of the tapering of the bond buying program. You know, the Fed tried to taper a few years ago on its bond buying program. And what we saw was all of a sudden the world was tight for cash. And you had this weird situation where, there weren't enough dollars around. This, I think goes back to probably 2018 or so. You had a little crunch in the market because there weren't enough dollars for companies and banks to roll forward their debt. So the Fed had to relent a little bit 2018, 2019 and keep buying bonds because they had to do it. And so we're going to be watching the tapering, and the Fed has been very clear. It's coming sooner rather than later. And it may actually start in the fourth quarter of this year. And we're going to be watching to see what the economic effects of that tapering are, because it could lead to both a tightening of credit availability, and it could also lead, and that would, I think, be reflected in a widening of the spreads between benchmark treasuries, treasury rates, Fed funds rate, benchmark rates, and what corporations pay, either, investment grade corporate bonds, municipal bonds, or lower grade corporate bonds. You may see the spreads widen for those kinds of bond markets because investors start reappraising the risks inherent in loaning to municipalities and corporations.
Well, Jeff, just one follow-up on that. The narrative that we hear from many financial outlets is that if the Fed does dial back the amount of bonds they're purchasing, right now $120 billion a month, let's say they cut it back to $90 billion, then $60 billion, and then they're eventually out of this accommodative phase, one of the concerns a lot of people have is, would that create a void in who's buying the bonds, and could that start moving interest rates higher, which would then press the markets and we're back to a 2013 taper tantrum or the little crunch in 2018 you mentioned? You don't think that'd be the case, though, correct?
I don't think it would be. There could be a little bit of a taper tantrum. There could be some upward pressure on interest rates. I think the Fed's probably got it right that any increase in interest rates, interest rates could double from where they are today, and they'd be 2.6%. For 10-year treasuries. So I think that you have the scope for some upward pressure on interest rates, but not enough to really do damage in terms of the economy. And the other thing is that, for all of its warts, the U.S. economy and the U.S. Treasury remain probably the safest place to put your money. There is an enormous amount of money out there. And I think that investors will continue to pivot. As I was saying, if you see people more reluctant to invest in corporate and municipal bonds, where's that money going to go? It's going to go to treasuries. So I think that if anything, what you'll find is that the Treasury owes the world enough that it owns it.
All right. Hey, Jeff, we're going to wrap it up here. Some very interesting questions or very interesting points regarding just what stage, especially the precious metals sector is in, and also where some of the interest is coming from and how we should be viewing what the Fed is going to do and how the markets could react. You're right. There are still a lot of question marks in the market and around the world, but I think sometimes we get a little too gloom and doomy sometimes. Jeff, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat again in another few weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Okay, thanks. You too. I'll be around.